Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Of course, memories and emotions will still affect you. And in a way, it's not nice because it doesn't feel nice, but it's endearing that even after almost 5 years, a couple of lines from a song can bring her back in that moment.
This week on Grief Encounters, we are joined by Laura Kennedy. I have been an admirer of her writing for quite some time. And really, it's been her writing about grief and the loss of her mother, Emma, that has stood with me and has been something that I've thought about a lot ever since my own mother died. And I think Laura has done wonderful, wonderful work by sharing her story, by being so open about the realities of grief. And that has, I think, helped so many people. And I think this chat will too. Our guest today is a writer who has done incredible work over the last 4 years in opening up the conversation around loss in Ireland and in the UK. Laura Kennedy lost her mother, Emma, to pancreatic cancer in November 2015 and has written extensively about the realities of grief ever since. There was a line that Laura wrote that stood with me so much. It has stuck with me for a really long time, and that is, quote, "It's rare that when someone dies, we can feel peace about it." Because I think so often we are told that people are in a better place or that the person is at peace. And oftentimes grief doesn't reflect that. Laura, thanks so much for coming on to the podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about your wonderful mother?
I can. it's such a general question. I think maybe it's an interesting first question, isn't it? Because it's a little bit... grief doesn't ever go away, obviously, as you know, and it's something you're sort of perpetually navigating. And when you're asked a general question like that about somebody who's dead, you kind of think you kind of need to reduce them in order to answer the question. And that's a really weird thing to have to do. And you kind of think, well, what do I say? My mother was a single mother, and she was born in the UK to Irish parents and moved to Limerick when she was 13. Mm-hmm. She never really quite fitted in. Even towards the end of her life, she kind of stood out a little bit and was a little bit of at odds with her environment. So she raised my brother and I in Limerick alone. Mm. And she had a comparatively difficult, kind of thankless life, really, I think, which is why, in part, her diagnosis at 56 and her death at 57 was so difficult to cope with, although obviously every death is difficult to cope with and the circumstances of it can always be called upon to justify that feeling.
Yeah. I mean, because she had gone through a lot, and like you said, she, you know, there's always that hope that the person will live long enough to see a different phase of their life, you know, like an easier time or an easier phase. Mm. I think, you know, my mother died when she was 63. I know that was something for me that I really had hoped that maybe in the latter part of her years, she would find a lot more enjoyment in life.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, my own mother was very much on the cusp of that. You know, it was kind of, I think she was a few years off paying off her mortgage by herself, which is an incredible achievement. Yeah. But also that mortgage was just this symbol throughout my childhood and adolescence of, you know, this kind of immovable burden that she was always terrified of and struggled every month to pay. So this concept that she was almost there was really powerfully motivating to her. And she was working two jobs
Wow.
Even then, when she was diagnosed, to kind of get that done. And it was this immense achievement that she could see, you know, within reasonable distance. And obviously she never made it there.
Yeah, that's very hard. It doesn't matter how many years later, that's really hard to make, you know, to look back and say what could have been.
I think it's one of those, it's one of the aspects of grief that kind of, and death that strikes you when somebody that you love is diagnosed with a terminal illness, which is just the kind of the mundanity of it.
Yeah.
And the ambivalence of it, or maybe even apathy is a better word. You know, like obviously cancer doesn't care you know what you've been through up to the point when you're diagnosed with it, and none of the kind of none of those mundane aspects of being alive go away. So you know, that bill for the mortgage comes in every month, and you know, you still have to buy food, you still have to, you know, pay your taxes, you still have to do all the stuff you did before, but you have to do it with the knowledge that, you know, you're going to die soon, and people around you have to kind of navigate that with you. And it's all, it's this strange friction between the knowledge that suddenly all of this mundane stuff is completely meaningless, you know, relatively speaking, in the grand scheme of things, but you still have to do it. And those mundanities were kind of the defining features of my mother's life. So the fact that they remained there when she was sick, it felt a little bit like a cruelty, and it felt a little bit inevitable as well.
Of course. And I think, you know, you have gone to the places that I find very admirable, because you talked a little bit about the insecurity and being frightened in those days, in those, you know, those days after you've been diagnosed, and those days in hospices. I think with both of my parents, the thing, they both died in a hospice, different hospices, but I was so overwhelmed by how frightened they were and how scared they were, and trying to help them through the process. I mean, was that something that was very difficult for you as her children to try and navigate?
When I kind of think about the months, the weeks directly after her death, it's kind of a blank, you know. I think grief sort of blacked them out. And I have a little bit of a similar experience around her diagnosis. I remember kind of having an inkling before it happened that it was going to be a worst case scenario situation, which it turned out to be. But she had always been the person who just sort of got stuff done, as it were, you know.
Yeah.
And I think I've always been very interested in emotions, and went on to study those and do a PhD in philosophy related to emotions, because I hate them because I think they're interesting, and because my mother always was so strident about controlling them, you know, that they're relevant, but they're not necessarily true. So how I felt seemed just not particularly relevant. You know, her need was evidently greater. And of course, I mean, as anybody would, I completely deconstructed myself every evening when I had, you know, privacy in which to do it. But it just felt like a burden she didn't need to do it in her presence, you know?
Yeah.
And also give you a sense of function, I think, as you probably know, and usefulness, to think that you can do small things to help that person and make their burden a little easier. So you focus on that and hold on to that.
Of course. And I think, you know, they become the things later on that you're very glad you did, because those are the special moments between you that you got to do something for them when they did so much for you.
Yeah, I mean, it also is, it's a very sudden and striking and slightly disturbing, if you had time to contemplate it, which of course you don't really until afterwards, role reversal, in that you become instantly, in the moment of that information being conveyed to you, the parent of your parents, really. Because it just isn't reasonable to expect them to be able to cope with any greater burden than the knowledge of their own impending death. So you just have to take care of all the rest of it.
Yeah, I couldn't relate more to that sentiment. There was also a story you told about the Christmas tree in the hospice, and when your mother said to you both that she didn't think she'd be able to make, you know, she didn't think she'd be able to make the dinner that year.
I remember my mother died in August of 2015, and I was going everywhere trying to find a miniature Christmas tree because I wanted to recreate Christmas. And like, it was just the stuff you do. It's just so funny. But my mother was going, I don't know why we would do this. I'll be fine. Like, I'll be out of here by then. And like, we'll just have regular Christmas. And it's when they say something like they'd started, the penny starting to drop, that maybe they won't be, you know, there. And that, you know, those moments, are they hard to think of now, or is that a memory that makes you feel good?
I think maybe somewhere in between. I think whenever I talk about this stuff, one of the most irritating things I think about going through grief, and anyone who's experienced it will know, is that you kind of never reach any form of finality with it. So you never fully completely leave the mindset you had, you know, the day they died. And there's always a part of you that is stuck back there a little bit and kind of, you know, still feels guilty, still feels the kind of pain that you felt when you heard them say something that implied that, you know, maybe they didn't know that they were where they were in those moments. And still feels a kind of a sense of maybe comfort that they didn't know. You know, when my mother said that she might not be able to make Christmas dinner this year, that was a few days before she died. And it kind of gave me a sudden realization that maybe she thought that she was, you know, further away from death than the rest of us thought she was. And it made me simultaneously, obviously, very deeply sad and also a little bit comforted on her behalf that, you know, maybe she didn't realize quite how bad she was at the time. But you know, you never really know whether it's better for a person to be fully aware of exactly where they're at or whether it isn't. And we always felt that, you know, it was never appropriate to be dishonest with her. So if she asked a question, we would answer it honestly.
And that's a hard position for children to be in, no matter what age you are, because you're making a judgment call for them. And like you said, when you have such respect for someone, and especially in your mother's case where you had such respect for her, you want to make the right decision and do what you feel she would want most. And obviously, if honesty is at the core of your relationship and what you guys were, you want to be honest. But it's a frightening thing to tell, you know, to be the bearer. Sometimes doctors don't get through the same way, or they don't hear it in the same way. But sometimes they feel like, a lot of times people look for their loved ones to be the ones to kind of be lay it straight for them. But that's certainly not an easy place to be. In terms of being, you know, you said it doesn't go away, and it doesn't. And I think even when you're saying about when you can always go back to the day and the pain, it's like it's almost just right under the surface. Whenever you access it, it's right there. How does it feel like now, coming up on the 5 years, and you're looking back? How do you cope with it now? What are the kind of ways that you think grief kind of is embedded into your life?
I think it's, it's very different now, which I think is important to say, especially for anybody, you know, who's in the beginning stages, because those beginning stages are completely awful. And, you know, there's something very, very close to shock, even when you expect it, because obviously you find yourself suddenly facing and being just required very cruelly to adjust to a version of your life that you never planned and didn't want. So you have that kind of initial shock to which everybody has immense sensitivity, or I hope most people experience great sensitivity from people around them when they've experienced loss at first. And then, you know, the world speeds back up and people go on ahead in their lives, and you kind of have these ankle weights, and you're sitting there in the bombed out wreckage of, you know, what used to be your life. And you can, it's kind of a dangerous period, because you can become resentful of other people, you know, for their seemingly carefree lives. And of course they're not carefree. It's just that your world has contracted. And I think that people in grief understandably become quite self-absorbed and narcissistic and, you know, pessimistic. And I was certainly guilty of that. But then as time passes, you know, your world expands a bit again, or hopefully it does. And I think I got there by accepting how I felt which I think is really important. It sounds very obvious, but, you know, if you resist it or ignore it, I think it's very dangerous, because you kind of just set it aside for a minute, and essentially you sort of give your grief a little respite rather than yourself, and it comes back more powerful after distracting yourself from it. But, I mean, it absolutely still manifests, and it does it in that kind of sneaky way that grief does. You know, something will come to you unbidden. You'll hear a song somewhere in a shop, and you'll think, oh, God.
Yeah.
Even now, it happens.
Yeah, of course it does. I mean, for someone that you said earlier, you hate emotions, which made me laugh. Because when you're grieving, dear Jesus, they are unpredictable, and they come often. Like, did you know that about yourself before grief, that you hated emotions? And then if so, how was that when you were faced with a lot of them?
Well, I mean, I should moderate my statements. That's a very emotional statement to make about emotions. I dislike them, I think, just because, you know, we tend to view how we feel very intensely. Essentially, we tend to view intensity of feeling as kind of an indicator of truthfulness. So, you know, if I feel really powerfully, say, offended by something you said, then it must be incredibly true that you said something offensive. And obviously those two things aren't connected to each other. So the interest in emotions really came from my mother, and it's always been there. And I've always been really passionately interested in Stoic philosophy, particularly as a way to manage emotions. And obviously it's influenced psychology and kind of therapeutic methods that we use even now, like cognitive behavioral therapy. All of that is based on Stoicism, which is pretty impressive. So I do utilize that. But I think we tend to look at Stoicism these days as about repressing your emotions, and it's really not. So, I mean, obviously in grief, you are little other than emotions. You kind of are reduced to this being of emotions, and emotions are physical as well as metaphysical. You know, they make you ill, they make you eat too much or eat too little, or, you know, they make you need to go to the bathroom unbidden and then get there and then you realize there's nothing to do. They're essentially incredibly treacherous. You kind of have to just manage them. And I think, obviously, I don't feel the rawness of emotion that I felt then, and I think it would be deeply concerning if I did.
Yeah.
But I do feel the depth of emotion.
Yeah.
But obviously, I've learned to recognize it better and cope with it better. And also just, I think, treat my responses with a bit of understanding and kindness, you know, because you can kind of think, oh, I feel like such an idiot getting obsessed in the supermarket because of the song that came on. But then you kind of think, oh, just, you're a person, you know, you're not impervious, you're not, of course, memories and emotions will still affect you. And in a way, it's not nice because it doesn't feel nice, but it's endearing, I think, that even after almost 5 years, you know, a couple of lines from a song can bring her back in that moment.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
And that is something that is fascinating about death and loss, is that the fear is that the person will be far away from you and gone after years pass. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't, in my experience, it doesn't seem to be the case. I mean, there's times or there's moments where you really feel like you wish they were there and they feel a million miles away. And then there's other times where you feel you can conjure up their voice, their face, their touch, everything in 1 second in your brain. Whereas somebody you would have known 10 years ago who you haven't seen in 10 years, you can't even imagine them at all. It's a strange thing. I think learning from, like, this is a tough one, and feel free if you totally disagree with me, because like you easily might. I think a lot of people would. But there's like I've learned a lot in grief about myself and emotions and the world and people and empathy and all kinds of things. And it's not to say that there's a silver lining or that I've made the best of it or something like that. That's just the honest truth for me. Because when my father died, just like you were talking about, I led my emotions led to me being reckless and, you know, making really rash decisions. Whereas when my mother died, I kind of said, okay, if you let this rule the show, and in terms of like your finances or just the practicalities, you can't let it go there. I almost put kind of boundaries around where it could go. Because I was sort of afraid of the enormity of it and what it could do. You're obviously a very smart woman who is very interested in learning. So do you feel like you have learned more about who you are through losing?
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't see how you couldn't. I think maybe some people don't like to say that because it's as though saying something good came of the death of someone I love. But something good comes from everything, no matter how awful it is, you know. So in that sense, that is something I gained and benefited from out of this, you know, objectively horrible situation. And I don't think there's any inherent betrayal or you know, minimizing of the awfulness of it to say that. You know, it sort of equips you with skills that you didn't think you could develop, and makes you the kind of person who can cope with things that you've always feared you couldn't. I mean, in my childhood, because I was raised by a single parent, I had this definitely in retrospect psychologically really unhealthy obsession with the idea that my mother would leave when I was quite young. And, you know, I remember specifically when I was growing up that her dying was just the greatest fear for me, because we were quite isolated as a family. It was my mother, my brother and I, and my father had a drinking problem. So anybody who, you know, comes from that kind of background knows that those sorts of families kind of shrink in, you know, because that person with an alcoholic can turn up at any time, you know, kind of embarrass you and ruin everything. So you stop socializing and you really kind of galvanize into this little unit. And it's not that healthy, but it's a coping mechanism. So I kind of got to my teens and really my mother was my person. So the idea that she could die and that I could, you know, live a functioning, you know, kind of decent life after that, I legitimately thought I couldn't, but of course I can, and that in itself also is not a betrayal, you know. I think sometimes we tend to think about, especially Irish people, we have a terrible habit of sanctifying people after they die. You know, we kind of, it's as though we can't remember the bad aspects of them.
Yeah,
we have to remember them as this saintly person. You know, who always put the toilet seat down, you know, you know, never made an error and was never prone to pettiness or being flawed like everybody else.
I'm bringing Twitter into this, which is extremely lame on my part. But I tweeted the other day, it was after, I don't know what it was about the hearing about Caroline Flack, but there was this thing that just kind of I couldn't get out of my head, which was, it's a very Irish thing as well. No one ever had a bad word to say about him. And that's like the best thing you can say about someone when they die. Like, oh, no one ever had a bad, but like, that's unrealistic. No, who lives, like, I don't think that there's many people who live their life day to day and there's not a bad word said about them. Like, we're all really human and flawed. And I feel so, her situation is so sad because there was publicly living out these scenarios. It doesn't make her any different than the rest of us. And the idea that, you know, we have to kind of look back at people and think of them as wonderful is the only option. Like, we don't get to think of them as anything other than wonderful and great. And it complicates things for us because none of us are that.
Yes, I think that's true. And it also, if you only remember the good aspects of somebody, it does kind of, it can lead you into this dangerous ground, particularly, I think, with a parent, when you're a parent, of kind of living your life in memoriam to them, you know? So they would have wanted me to do X, they would have wanted me to be Y, so I'd better do that. When, you know, you probably honor them better by equipping yourself to use the skills they gave you to make the best decisions for yourself. You know, particularly if you find yourself doing things that you don't like because, you know, your mother or your father would have wanted you to.
Of course. I remember in therapy as well, I went to therapy after both my parents died. And one of the things that she said to me, she was a really great and really honest counselor. And she said, you have to be careful of grief. If you grieve people only when you're glorifying them, you don't actually grieve properly because you're not grieving the real person. You're grieving a version of them. And someday you will have to grieve the realities of who that person was. Which I thought was quite a powerful thing. Laura, thank you. I'm going to stop here because I think we're running out of time. I cannot thank you enough for taking the time out to talk to us about your mom, and how, you know, you have shared this with the world has been so helpful. I know it's been very helpful to me, to be able to read about your journey. So thank you so much.
No, thanks. It's been a little while since I've talked about it, so I hope it was coherent.
It was great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.